am really, really thinking about fiddling with things to get both guys in there and go with the Edmonton 1-2 punch.
Well, why don't you just add Mike Riley as your quarterback while you're at it?
And play no one else.
I could play three players, and then I'd have to leave the rest of my spots empty.
All right.
It's time for week 9 as the CFL Fantasy Podcast is a go for a 9th consecutive week. Welcome to it. Get yourself over to cflfantasy.tsn.ca. Get your lineup set as our season-long winner is still in line for a $10,000 payday. My name is Pat Steinberg, the Monday morning quarterback at cfl.ca, joined alongside Hannah Nordman and Jeff Creever for another edition of the podcast. And coming up this week, Creever's big week. We've got to talk about it. He's got bragging rights. I'll tease it. And then Creever's probably going to talk about it for 10 or 15 minutes, but Jeff had a good week, so we have to talk about it. More Johnny Manziel, and again, it's a third consecutive week, but we've got to get into Johnny Football and his inaugural CFL performance for Montreal, and some intriguing options. It's one of those three-game weeks in Week 9, so some really interesting debate about who to get into your lineup for this week. As we approach the halfway mark of the season, guys, Timmy is the game's overall leader through 8 weeks. He's got 917.5 points. Twice he's gone over 160 points, including in week 8. As for the week 8 overall stats, congratulations to Tony 400, led by Deontay Spencer, Jalen Saunders, McLeod Bethel-Thompson, and the Hamilton Tiger Cats defense. He put up 171.9 points to be the overall leader in week number 8. As for the CFL Fantasy Podcast, guys, well, our featured group on cflfantasy.tsn.ca. Right now, our league has 340 people in it, and definitely not too late to join us. Jamie M63 is our group's current leader at 909.1. He's at 100 points or more every week but one, and that 1 week he didn't go over 100, he still had 96.8. He's had a very consistent run. So, as for the three members of this podcast, well, Hannah and I put up almost identical totals in week 8. 80.1 for me, Hannah 80.7, but Creever, it is your time in the sunshine. 144.1 points, that's the best week of any of us. You certainly had some very, very strong performances from Kamar Jordan, Deontay Spencer, and more. You've cleared Hannah and I by a good margin now in our little internal standings. But Hannah, I don't know if you've noticed this or not, because it's a little inside baseball. Jeff writes up a little rundown for us each week. He kind of puts together some content. He does a very good job. For whatever reason, the highlights of his 144-point week seem to take up about three-quarters of a page. Way more than when you and I have good weeks. Did you notice that as well?
Yeah, funny how that happens.
Pat, come on. That's an exaggeration.
Hannah, am I exaggerating?
Everybody. I'm looking at the paper right now. Hannah, there's a lot of pro-Jeff all over this thing.
Be careful. Come on.
I wouldn't go three quarters, but man, half a page of pro Jeff propaganda.
All right. Well, you know what? When propaganda, when you guys have a 145 point week.
Yeah.
Okay, 144 to be fair. I'll let you guys write the rundown. That's fine. No problem with me, because so far no one's even come close to that. Listen, when I had that 45-point week 2 weeks ago, I wrote plenty about
it.
Myself.
You owned it. I'll give you that.
I owned it, and I gave you. I think you didn't even take all of that ammo there that I wrote for you to make fun of me. So, hey, I'm honest. You know what it is? I'm honest, and I'm an equal opportunist, and I got to brag about this week. Everything went well for me, and it's good to be back on top.
You know, that week you got 45 points, I think you wrote "make fun of Jeff" here on the rundown a couple times. So I'll give you that.
That couldn't be more glaring. Yeah. It's like a post-it note. Make fun of me. Make fun of myself. I'm okay with it.
Well, congrats. Solid week. 144.1 for Jeff Creever. He leads our overall standings and had himself a very, very good week 8. Hannah, you and I didn't have poor weeks, but we didn't have great weeks either. Kind of right there, middling weeks. Where did you go wrong? For me, I am having a heck of a time the last couple weeks with my running back picks. I just cannot seem to find good value. I cannot seem to get good points coming from that position. So that's where I've kind of hit a snag in week 7, week 8, even going back to week 6. I'm curious as to where you went wrong with your week 8 lineup.
I gotta say, I was heading head first to a disaster of a week. After those Thursday games, my total was awful. The 20-something point range, I had two guys left to play. I thought I was going to have a sub-45 point week like Jeff, and I was never going to hear about it.
Which you were vocal about on Twitter, by the way.
I was.
Had to get your dig in.
Very worried.
I'm sitting there having a very good week and thinking everything's going great. And then all of a sudden, there's Hannah taking a little jab at me on Twitter for everyone.
It's
hey, remember that
things.
Time Jeff had a 45 point week? Well, yeah. At least I'm not doing that.
Really, that's the baseline that I am setting for this year. I can't go below that. So I guess my mistake this week was relying way too heavily on that Edmonton-Saskatchewan matchup. I put a lot of my money into it, and it did not pay off, and it almost led me to a disastrous week 8.
Well, I'm glad you were able to pull it out when it was all said and done. 80.7 points for Hannah, 80.1 for me, 144.1 for Creever in week 8. Overall, the week 8 highlights were led by Deontay Spencer. And hey, Jeff, you called it. You talked about how you thought this might be his breakout game. It was. The Red Blacks receiver had a huge day, posted the second highest total all season for a player and the highest total for any non-quarterback. He finished with 38.7 points, even scored on a punt return. So that was very impressive. Lots of massive performances from receivers overall in week 8. And in fact, over total 14 players got over 20 points. Only week 2, where we had 16 players in that category, had more. Interesting on the quarterback side of things, because in terms of single game performances from Pivot so far this year, the top 3 in order, Mike Riley, Chris Treveller, and then number 3, after his week 8 performance, Toronto's McLeod Bethel-Thompson. Now, the Argos on a bye in week 8, so you don't have a choice to put him in. But the Argos pivot had 31.5 points in his first career start, leading the Argos from 24 points down, throwing 4 touchdown passes in the second half. He gave you huge value at $6,000. The bargain buys this week, we were talking low-end 2,500 players. Jordan Williams-Lambert, who was Hannah's bargain pick last week, had 12.6. RJ Harris, 12.3. Romar Morris, 11.7. And Eugene Lewis, who is Jeff's money pick, had 11.6 points in week number 8. And finally, if you took Johnny Manziel, if you were bold, if you were brash, and you went with Johnny Football, you suffered huge for you. In fact, you would have been much better off leaving your quarterback slot empty. Manziel cost $7,000, and he lost points. 4 interceptions, no touchdowns, and his fantasy numbers -3.4. No one here took him, but that's where we get into our first discussion topic of week 9, because for the 3rd week in a row, he is a huge talking point. We have to talk about what was a really rough performance. And Jeff, we'll start with you, because you were very, I know you didn't put him in your lineup, but you talked about how bullish you were on him and how you think he's got the potential to have himself a big week. In fact, a few weeks ago, you scoffed at me for comparing him to Troy Smith, and you thought that was the most ludicrous take of all time. Troy Smith never looked that bad in a CFL game. Granted, I think Manziel's got lots more in the tank that's going to be better than his debut performance. But what do you have to say for yourself? What were your observations of Johnny Football in week 8?
Really? Is that where we're going? Is that what this has come to? We're going to circle back and talk about Troy Smith again? Pat, you're killing me. Troy Smith, come on. Johnny, you know what? And last week, there were a lot of good things said on this podcast and a lot of good advice given, a lot of it by myself, to throw that out there. And that would be a podcast I would put on the frame if I could. The Johnny Manziel thing wasn't one of those things. And actually, my good friend and coworker Robbie Abramson in our office, I was talking about last week, our social guy, he took him, and I felt a little bit bad because he wasn't going to take him in the end. He was kind of having a bit of a change in heart, but because I threw his name out on the podcast, he decided to take him, and he was having a good week, but he ate those -3.4 points. But yeah, Johnny had a tough go, and he threw 4 interceptions, took the minus points in CFL fantasy, took the loss in a big way, 50-11. That's a really bad score. But Johnny Manziel wasn't as bad as the score would indicate, or as bad as his stat line would indicate. Yeah, he went into the game and made some mistakes. And remember, this is a quarterback playing his first real professional football game. I don't count the fall league in quite a number of years now, with a team that just acquired him. And yeah, that's not to make excuses, because I did say that he would be a solid pick at $7,000, and he didn't come through with that. But I still, and you can't convince me otherwise, you can try, I still think he's a guy that should be on the fantasy football radar, because there's going to be a lot better than what he put forth last week, and I'm fairly certain that that's going to be a blip on the radar. And he did show last week, he did show some glimpses. He did show some glimpses.
Hanno, you were kind of in the middle, right? You were kind of in the middle in this whole conversation. Where are you on Johnny Manziel after that outing?
Yeah, I was having a hard time putting a strong opinion either way. I did call him a chaos pick, I believe. Either he's going to crash and burn, or he's going to have the kind of week that McLeod Bethel Thompson had, and I'm still shocked that that happened, to be honest. But I think anyone who put him in their lineup is not shocked at the way it went. I can't see a situation where I would be putting him in right now, because he was up against a defense that he knew well. It's not like he can play himself. He can't have that up against the Alouettes matchup that we normally target. I don't see there being a better matchup for him to have success. He's just going to have to ease into things. And I really like the attitude that he took after the game. He was positive. He was humbled. He's ready to get back to work. I just don't see myself putting him in a lineup this season.
I am very much wait and see on Johnny Manziel right now. I mean, look, I think he's going to be much better than he was in his first game. The only thing that worried me, because Jeff, you're right, he showed flashes. He showed a few signs that freakish athletic ability that existed when he won a Heisman Trophy, that he existed when he went in the first round in the NFL draft. He showed that athletic ability. He showed his shotgun arm. Like, he showed some of the God-given gifts that he possesses, and that's a positive. But what worries me is the decision-making, and it was a lot of the same decision-making we saw from him in the NFL with the Cleveland Browns, rushing passes, trying to force things in. And that to me worries me a little bit, because at this stage of his career, I don't know if that's something that you can all of a sudden wean out of him. You know, I think that works in college football because the talent pool is a whole lot thinner, and so you go up against DBs and linebackers that aren't going to be playing at the same level as you're going to get professionally, because it really starts to get honed in once you get to the next level. Whereas in the Canadian Football League, in the NFL, you're going up against top-level college DBs, top-level linebackers that read coverages and read quarterbacks at a very high level. And some of the decisions that he made worry me. And I think he'll be better than what he was. I'm just not convinced we're talking about a surefire success story in this league. Not because he threw four interceptions, more just overall what I saw from him. But you're right, there absolutely were flashes of his athletic ability.
I do hate to drag this on, but it's worth talking about, and it's very relevant in this game that we're trying to play, where, you know, you have Mike Riley coming in at 14,000, you have Travis Lule coming in at around 6,000, Zach Caleros, who's on a bye, was under 6,000, and there's Johnny Manziel at 7,000, and is he a quarterback worth taking? Now, this week, just like last week, there's the understanding that there's a lot of risk associated with that. If you're picking Johnny Manziel, you know, like Hannah said, that there's a chance that he's going to crash and burn and struggle. Pat, the thing that was interesting that you said was he made a lot of interesting but poor decisions in that game. And I think that comes from being overwhelmed, from being unsure. Well, is that not expected with Johnny Manziel when he's this new to the game and this new in the offense? Part of the thing that happened with the Cleveland Browns, now, he may have brought this upon himself if he wasn't prepared all the time, as some of the rumors and as even he would suggest in the past, but they weren't running an offense at all similar to what he was doing in college, and they were putting him in situations that he simply wasn't used to. That's the same thing here. To say that this is what you're going to get with him, I think, would be absurd, and not that anyone's saying that, but there is going to come a time, if the Alouettes are patient with him and if he's patient himself, where the game is going to slow down a little bit for Johnny Manziel, and when it does, this is what I see in him. I see a quarterback that can just has incredible elusiveness, like we saw last game. I mean, that play to Tyrell Sutton early in the game, that was an interception. That's where the stats don't tell the whole story, because that was an incredible play by Johnny Manziel, and it should have been a completion and a first down gain to Tyrell Sutton. And maybe that changes a bit of the game, right? But Manziel was put in a situation where, A, he's not used to his surroundings, and B, everything was going against him. They were already down 7-0. The first play of the game, they go backwards 5 yards on the play to B.J. Cunningham. So his first snap, his first real passing attempt as a starter, he's in second and 15 with his team down 7-0, and he's just looking to make something happen. So I think from the get-go, it was a really bad situation for Johnny Manziel. I'm looking this week for him, and this concludes my long rant, but I'm looking for him to be in a situation where Kahari Jones is going to set him up with a lot of, just like Chris Trevler early in the year, where it's, okay, one read, if that's no good, second read, if that's no good, just take off and run, man. Just get out of there. Get your yards. A lot of throws to Tyrell Sutton, the running back. A lot of checkdowns. I think there needs to be a simplified offense for him. And I think that was the plan last game. It just got lost with the way that things sort of took off and got away from him early in the game.
Well, here's what I'll say as we wrap. I promise we're wrapping up the Johnny Manziel talk. I think that there's a lot of wisdom in what you just said there. But for me, until he shows it, I don't think that he is a real viable fantasy play at this point, because the risk of him having a real rough outing is still high. And I think until you start to see him get more comfortable, I don't think you're wrong. I think there was some overwhelmed moments from him, but until, you know, him being overwhelmed stops, until he gets more comfortable with the CFL game, I don't think that he's a viable fantasy play. We'll wait and see.
But Ottawa's defense, though.
What's that?
Ottawa's defense looks beatable right now.
Yeah. Yeah. You're taking a huge risk putting him in your lineup. I don't think, can we all agree on that? You're taking a big risk if you put Manziel in your lineup?
Oh, yeah.
Big risk, yeah. Big reward, probably not, but maybe.
Jeff?
The room is silent because all three of us strongly agree on the same thing for possibly the first time ever.
Yep, we do. Well, I promise. I don't know if I can promise 100%, but I attempt to promise. That's the last time we'll talk about Johnny Manziel in the Week 9 edition of the CFL Fantasy Podcast. Okay, we're underway. As mentioned, just 3 games this week on the Week 9 schedule, but lots of news to sink your teeth into. Time to throw it over to Hannah. She's got a lot to get to on this week's Fantasy Flash.
I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen. Cannonball!
All right, Jeremiah Johnson is expected to miss Thursday's game versus Edmonton as per TSN's Lowell Ulrich after aggravating his injured ankle. It's looking like it'll be Chris Rainey and Trayvon Vann at running back for the Lions. The Eskimos receiving core could get even more crowded this week as Vidal Hazelton is back at practice, according to Dave Campbell. Also from Campbell, Edmonton running back Jordan Robinson has been held out of practice early in the week after suffering an injury versus the Riders in Week 8. In Hamilton, according to Drew Edwards, there's a chance one of Brandon Banks, Chris Williams, or Jalen Saunders could handle the punt return duties this week. Ticats' usual returner Frankie Williams has not been practicing. In Montreal, all eyes remain on Johnny Manziel, who will make his second career start on Saturday versus Ottawa. He checks in at $7,000 after a minus week in his fantasy debut. And Winnipeg is back off the bye with what appears to be a clean bill of health, at least from a fantasy perspective, while Toronto, Calgary, and Saskatchewan are all off in Week 9.
Well, we went about 30 seconds without mentioning Johnny Manziel's name, at least. This game is getting interesting now, because early in the season, the prices were a lot lower on high-end receivers, and we were seeing some very high fantasy scores as a result. I don't know about you guys, Pat and Hannah, but this week it seems like the prices of the high-end receivers have skyrocketed. You have Brandon Banks, who's over 9,000, Duke Williams, who's around 8,500. Even with only 3 games this week, you have 3 receivers now that are over $8,000, 6 in total over $7,000. So I guess we're at that point where you have those guys that are legitimate wide receiver ones. And now, unlike in the past, unless you make real concessions elsewhere, you're only going to be able to fit one of those guys in the lineup. Brandon Banks, Duke Williams, Brad Sinopoli, Darrell Walker, Deontay Spencer, and Jalen Saunders. All of those guys are over $7,000, actually over $7,500 this week. So, hey, if you can find a way to get multiple in your lineup, great. To me, it's too much money. Let's start with that. Pat and Hannah, you have to pick one and you have to kind of shade another. Pick a guy that you think is a little overpriced or who you think that fantasy players this week should not pick in their lineup. So one you like, one you don't like.
Well, for me, the guy that jumps off the page to me as a real solid buy, you're right, there's a lot of money that you're going to be spending to get some of these receivers in your lineup, but I really like Darrell Walker. He's under $8,000, a shade, but he's under $8,000, and of this list of six guys, he's number four on that list. You know, we know what Edmonton does in the passing game, and yes, Duke Williams has been outstanding as well, and there's that whole conversation of Duke and Darrell, and do you go one or the other or both, but for me, I like the value a little bit more and only slightly more in Darrell Walker. He's only about $700, $800 less than Duke Williams, but I like the value a little bit more. So he's the guy I like. What's interesting, I don't dislike any of these guys, Hannah. The guy that is most interesting to me that I would think of these six would be the riskiest is Brandon Banks, because he's over $9,000 a year. That's a lot of money to pay for a receiver. 91.90 is a lot. That's number one. But number two, what you just said in the Fantasy Flash about the potential of him taking kickoff and punt returns, that's very interesting to me. And because Banks has been so good in that area before, and if they decide to go down that road and use him there, look, we know that he can absolutely bust off huge returns and he can get you yardage that way, but does that take away from what he can do and the touchdowns he might be able to score and how much he's worked into the game offensively? So of those six guys, the riskiest one for me seems to be Banks. The one that I like most is Darrell Walker, but where are you on that, Hannah?
I would agree with you on fading Brandon Banks at this point, because at $9,200, I can't figure out a single way to get him in my lineup. You're probably going to get good points there, but I don't think the return, the value is quite there. Obviously, all great picks. They're that expensive for a reason. The guy who most intrigues me and who's in my lineup probably this week is Deontay Spencer. I like the matchup, obviously, up against Montreal, and he's just getting points in so many ways. You have the receiving, the rushing, the punt return, and the kickoff return points pretty much every week. Those totals are getting pretty high week by week, and at the fifth priced receiver, I'd say he's a much better bet on value for money.
Okay, and who don't you like?
Yeah, Banks was my favorite. Oh, Banks was at 92. Right. 9,200, okay. Too much.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We talked about Deontay last week, and he's got that crazy ceiling, as we saw against the Argos, but he's also got that floor to where there have been some frustrating weeks where he's only had a couple of catches and under 20 or 30 yards, yet he's still getting you 10 points because of the return ability. So I like that. I can go along with that. It looks like we're probably not going to clash on anything here, the three of us, which is a bit of a spin on things.
What's happening right now?
Yeah. The receiver that I'm going to fade this week is actually Brad Sinopoli. And it's funny because I did this with Duke Williams last week. I thought that Darrell Walker was going to have a big week. I thought Duke might struggle against the Riders and their dominant secondary, their dominant defense as a whole. I think it's going to be really difficult for Brad Sinopoli to keep doing what he's been doing. And he has been remarkably consistent this season. But for what he is, he's not a huge threat to score touchdowns, as has been shown throughout his career. He's a volume catches guy, and that might be there against Montreal, but I'm just waiting for Greg Ellingson to break out. And I like Brad Sinopoli a lot at a certain price. I just think $8,000 is a little bit high for him, given the type of player that he is. Now, he has two of the higher scores for receivers this year, so it's pretty hard to fade him. But yeah, that's just a gut feeling, I guess, that I have. The guy that I like this week is Jalen Saunders. I still think he's a little bit low, and it's becoming clear to me that there's a divide on the Ticats receiving corps where Brandon Banks and Jalen Saunders are the two guys. Those are the two guys the football is going to go through. So I think Saunders is becoming an elite receiver in this league. He's obviously got a lot of ability. He's very fast. He's a good route runner, gets open. And he's got a lot of chemistry with Jeremiah Mazzoli. And the Ticats love looking to him in the red zone as well. So I'm gonna jump on that as what I see compared to the rest of the guys as a value pick. And certainly next to Brandon Banks, who's about $1,600 more than Jalen Saunders, if my math is correct. So I'm big on Saunders this week.
The one thing that you mentioned about getting both guys in your lineup and getting two of those number one, you can do it. You can do it, but it's tough. You have to get yourself a really, really low end and find a good value flex player, and you probably got to go empty at your defense spot. So you can get, like right now, I'm looking at my preliminary lineup. I've got Saunders and Walker in right now with two running backs around $7,000 as well. So I've got them both in there, but I also had to find what I think is a good value flex player, and my defense is empty. So you can do it, but it's definitely, you got to be creative. There's no doubt about it.
And what are you spending on your quarterback in that spot then?
I've got Lule in there, and I know we're going to talk about the little bit later, okay. But I've got Lule at $6,000. So I'm buying low at quarterback too.
So you're buying low in a lot of places and loading up on those two receivers. So it is possible, but there are clearly some sacrifices to make there.
You have to make some big concessions. And I think that the way I'm eventually going to figure this out is I want to take multiple receivers in that big elite zone, but if I can't, I'm going to have to go with whoever I can match with my quarterback. I think that's the most efficient way to do it. If I've got Harris in there, I'm going to have to go for one of the high-ticket Ottawa receivers. If I've got, I guess Riley and a receiver would pretty much eat up at least half your budget. Mazzoli and Banks would eat up half your budget. It's tough. It's getting a lot tougher, and I think it's both part of the way the pricing is going and part of a three-game week where our options are limited. A place that you can find some value, though, I don't know if you want to. I guess that's the debate here, is BC. So with Lule back, are Burnham and Arsenault some value picks for your wide receiver too, or maybe even a flex spot this week? They're up against Edmonton.
I think there are. I think there's a lot of value there because you've got Manny Arsenault coming in at a touch under 6,000. We talked about all those wide receiver one candidates. Why not Manny Arsenault? How come he can't be in that discussion? And I think he can be because his value took a big hit with his struggles out of the gate. And obviously that offense wasn't flying and not attacking vertically, or at least connecting down the field under Jonathan Jennings the same way it is with Travis Lule. And I think there's going to be a little bit of a correction there. In the next few weeks, we're going to see Manny continue to put up numbers, and his value is going to go up a little bit. And I wouldn't be shocked if in the next few weeks a player like Arsenault or Brian Burnham being at actually even $200 cheaper at 5602, I think one of those two guys has a good chance to kind of enter that wide receiver one conversation. So I think there's some value there for sure to take advantage of.
Stop the presses, because once again, I agree completely. Right now, I think there's not a lot of spots to go for value right now in week 9. There's a lot of expensive players out there, and you really start to see a disparity and a huge gap between the trusted guys and guys that are going to be more of a risk each and every week. But I think the best value, especially in week 9, comes from the BC Lions. Chris Rainey at $6,600, that's a solid bet. Now, Trayvon Vaughn, I know we're talking about receivers, but you know, another running back at under $5,000, you've got yourself some interesting value there. And at receiver, you've got some really interesting buys. To see Manny Arsenault under 6,000, to see Brian Burnham 200 less than Arsenault, I think you can get some good value with those guys. I know Burnham just got his first touchdown of the season last week, and I know that they have not been putting up huge numbers, but I think with Lule back at quarterback and with him starting to get more and more comfortable on his comeback trail here, I think BC's offense is starting to turn into a little bit less of a wasteland than it was before. You've got Kevin Elliott at $3,000. You've got Ricky Collins at $4,000. There are some interesting names on that BC team that I think could be good for solid weeks, and you're not going to be breaking the bank to get them. So I think there's some real value on the Lions right now, and I think they're the one team that positionally across the board you can get some decent value for, and I don't know how much longer that's going to last.
Yeah, and Ricky Collins too is a good name you touched on, and I'll just touch quickly on it, but he's another guy in the boundary wideout spot of that offense that's typically a very productive position. And he's showed some early chemistry with Travis Lule. So I think if you're going with Lule, for sure, you want to have one or possibly two of those Lions receivers in there. And you've got to think that this could be a high-scoring game between two teams that could put up big offense. So Collins, by the way, last week, three catches, a little over 30 yards, so just over 6 points. Not doing anything amazing, but that's against the Calgary Stampeders, and they can sort of be viewed as a bit of a fantasy black hole for opponents. So there's a lot to look there for sure, for me anyway.
I'm willing to disagree on this one with you guys, because by the time I get to my flex spot, I don't have $6,000 remaining. I've got $3,000. So if you guys are putting them in your lineup, you're putting them in a very central role.
Yeah.
Wide receiver two, maybe even wide receiver one. And with those options we talked about right off the top, those are the kind of guys that are more proven that I want to get into my lineup. I want to make my concessions elsewhere. I don't really want to be building my offense around Manny Arsenault right now.
Well, Collins is a solid flex at around 4K. But yeah, Manny, I think if you're going with Manny or Burnham, you have to look at them at minimum as a wide receiver too. But you could even say, if you think that one of those guys can give you a 20-point week and give you elite receiver production, then they can be your wide receiver one, and you can save a little bit of money elsewhere. But that's just one way to look at it. And I do think there's a little bit of value there.
I can understand it if you have Lule in as your quarterback and you're trying to match up. And that could be a very efficient offense for you this week, especially, like you said, up against Edmonton, who does give up those big points. So where do you place Travis Lule among quarterbacks right now? Is he a strong play against Edmonton this week?
He, to me, is a good value play. Good value play. I think that, you know, in terms of strength and in terms of maybe a little bit more confidence in what you're going to get, I don't think there's any doubt that Riley Mazzoli, Harris, and probably even Matt Nichols are guys that you're a little bit more confident in at this point. But when you take a look at Lule's value and what I saw from him against the best defense on the planet right now, what I saw from him against Calgary last week was really, really encouraging. He was willing to extend plays and make accurate throws on the run. He was good in the pocket. He made some real nice touch passes to get over some good DBs on that Stampeder secondary. And I liked what I saw from Travis Lule. And going up against, to me, the greatest kind of barometer you can get as an offensive player is going up against the Stamps defense. And that was really encouraging. So when I see a $6,000 price tag for Lule and I compare that to the rest of the quarterbacks out there, I think there's some really good value in there. You know, he's less than Johnny Manziel at this point. He's less than, you know, some of the other names that you'll see there. And that's a guy that if you are looking to really cash in with some of the other big name running backs or receivers that you could put in at quarterback, like I have right now. Lule's in my lineup preliminary right now. It helps you get some other big names that you can, you know, get some pretty steady production from, or that you have gotten pretty steady production from this year. So is he the strongest play in week nine? No, but he's a very good value and a very intriguing play in week nine.
I think Lule is in an interesting bubble along with Bo Levi Mitchell, Trevor Harris, and possibly Matt Nichols. That sort of secondary bubble of quarterbacks that, you know, whether they're elite or not on the field outside of the fantasy realm is a different discussion, but quarterbacks that are consistent and are going to get you points but probably aren't going to go off for one of those 30 or 40 point weeks. And the thing that they all have in common is they don't get those goal line carries. They don't get the short yardage. They don't run the football into the end zone, and that's going to limit their ability. Now, it's not Lule, but with Bo, similar example, similar type of thing happens. Last week, we saw Bo quickly drive his team right before half all the way down the field from their own 5-yard line. And Bo Levi Mitchell did all the work. And then when they got to the goal line, they took him out. And it was Romar Morris getting carries, and it was Nick Arbuckle getting carries. And I think that is a serious handicap for a quarterback in fantasy. As far as placing Travis Lule, I like him. I think he's showing a lot like he has in the past. I think he's got that same ability in him, and he can make all the throws. He's efficient. He's not going to turn the ball over, and he's not going to give you one of those duds. And at that price tag, I like him a lot. Just don't expect anything like you're going to be getting on some occasions from a Jeremiah Mazzoli or a Mike Riley, because I don't see that upside. But he's solid.
Yeah, there's kind of three price categories, and Lule is the most tantalizing one at $6,000. Normally, the guys you see at that price range are getting their first start, the Bethel Thompsons, the Chris Strevlers, when they first started. They normally come into the league at $5,000-$6,000. So to get a name that I trust more than a first-time starter at $6,000, I think it's pretty good. Then you have the super expensive ones, Mazzoli, Riley. They're out of my price range now. I'm really interested personally, though, in that mid-range, the Nichols and the Harris this week. So I think that's where I'm looking. It's kind of between those two guys. But if you're trying to get those big receivers in there, I think that could be a really good, pretty safe way to bring your costs down in other places. Just want to move along a little bit. Kamar Jordan did some big things against the Lions last week. Duke Williams had success the first time against BC, and now he's coming off kind of his first down game of the season. So I just want to get your confidence level in a guy like Duke Williams this week on a scale of 1 to 10, just making it easier to quantify.
All right. I like this, where we have to give it a number and we can't all just nod our heads and agree.
Yeah, we can't just say yes, that's good. One to 10.
Yeah, I'm a 10. And you know what? It's, if you can afford them, at $8,697, you should have Duke Williams in your lineup, because he's going against the Lions team that has struggled at times with inside receivers. You saw what Duke did the last time these two teams played, and you saw what Kamar Jordan did last week. Duke's a big play guy. Riley's got the big arm. The Lions are defending the run a little bit better lately. I think that there are going to be a lot of opportunities for Duke in that slot position down the field to beat that BC Lions deep. I just don't think the Lions have the horses in their secondary. So add in the fact that, and this the argument that a player is due for a big game makes is absolutely stupid and fried and makes no sense, yet I say it anyway. Based on the fact that Duke did very little last week and he's been so consistent this season, I'm expecting a big bounce back game from him, even if that's not really grounded in reason.
Pat, before you jump in, I want to dive in, because I also have him at a 10. There's no reason to believe he won't have a big week. One down week is not going to sway my decision. What might sway my decision to put him in my lineup is the fact that he had a down week and his price still went up $350. He's up around $8,700. So I don't think he's going to be in my lineup, but I think if he's in yours, you're going to get a big week from him. I have tons of confidence in the guy.
I'm not thinking he's going to have a bad week. I'm down more around a 7, though. And the reason why is because of what he did in week 3 against BC. He lit them up, 129 yards and a touchdown. And Duke Williams really had his way with BC in their last meeting. And I think there's some lessons learned. And I think that defensive unit in BC, while they have not been great, and I'm with you, I don't think they've got the best stable of horses in that secondary. I just think he gets even more attention. And I wonder if things don't open up a little bit more for a guy like Darrell Walker. So I think Duke's always a good bet to have a good week. He's one of the best receivers in this league. Like, he's always a solid bet to have in your lineup. But am I a 10 that he's going to go off for triple digits and a touchdown or two? No, I'm more like a 7. My confidence level is higher in Darrell Walker having that type of week than it is for Duke Williams. But even at $8,700, you're never going to really go wrong putting Duke in your lineup. I just am not quite as confident that he goes off in week 9 as you guys are.
Let me just read the numbers for you here. Duke Williams has played 3 games in his career against the Edmonton Eskimos. Last season, you remember his first ever game was against BC. 4 yards, 110 yards, and a touchdown. 4 catches, 110 yards, and a touchdown, sorry, in that first game. Second game against BC, 4 catches, 104 yards. So you're looking at a player that's had 100 yards. He's hit the century mark all 3 times in his career that he's played against the BC Lions. So I have a hard time seeing that changing right now.
Right. Look, I'll say this. I am fiddling with trying to get Darrell Walker and Duke Williams in my lineup because I do think there is a matchup to exploit right now because that is a BC defense that is vulnerable. I just, if I were to have to choose between one of them, I'm more confident in Darrell than I am in Duke, but I am really, really thinking about fiddling with things to get both guys in there and go with the Edmonton 1-2 punch.
Well, why don't you just add Mike Riley as your quarterback while you're at it?
I don't think that that's possible. I could play three players and then I'd have to leave the rest of my spots empty.
All right.
I want to switch over to running backs for a bit because this is where I've had a bunch of trouble so far putting this lineup together. And Alex Green had a really good first showing, 19.4 points, 2 touchdowns. What do you make of his dominant showing? Do you think that's going to carry on forward?
I'll go. He looked good, and we should have known. I mean, I should have known. That's a regret. We talked about regrets. I took Tyrell Sutton instead of Alex Green, and Sutton was a little bit more. I could have had Green, and I would have added about 15 points.
Oh,
by the
greedy,
way, I don't know if you remember, I had 145 points last week. Just want to throw that out there. We haven't talked about it enough. It could have been a 160, though, had I done that. All right, enough about myself. I hate talking about myself, guys. Yeah, Alex Green looked really good. And against the Owls, that should have been expected with that defense and that matchup. I do think he's going to have a difficult time carrying that over against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. The Bombers are pretty good against the run. That D-line is very strong. And I think the Ticats are going to have to do some things and look through the air a little bit more often this week. But Green looks good, and I like his upside moving forward.
I like him moving forward. I don't love him in week 9. I'm with you. That's a Winnipeg defense that's been very stingy against the run. Number 3, less than 90 yards a game on the ground and against. You know, you're seeing a lot of 60, 65-yard outings for running backs against that Bombers front four and against that run defense. So I don't love the matchup, but I do think, you know, early on it was, you know, you kind of had three guys that you were thinking about with that Hamilton backfield. It's Alex Green's now. I mean, he is the guy, and I think that he's a very intriguing matchup on a week-to-week basis, but matchup-wise, I think there are far better running backs to look at. I know we're going to get into that right now, but I think there are better options to look at than Green. I liked his performance against Montreal, and I think he'll be an option as an RB1 plenty of times as we move into the second half of the season. I just don't like him in that spot for week 9.
By the way, Mo Leggett on the Bombers, unlikely to play this week after missing practice through the start of the week. So not sure what impact that has there, but just something to keep in mind if you're looking at the Ticats receivers or running back this week.
My last note on Alex Green is that I like what he can do. I'm not worried about him being able to do that. I just don't see that's how Hamilton puts their offense together. It's not a team that does a ton of running. Only one other player the whole season has put up more than his 19.4 points as a running back on Hamilton. It's basically been where running back points go to die. There's a lot of single-digit totals here from all of their running backs. So I'm not really sure that's how they function as a team.
They certainly run the football more than they used to before June Jones was there. And I think it's clear that when the Ticats have been successful this year, it's been when they've run the football. They had trouble running it against the Riders, and they lost those two games as a consequence. So I do think that there's going to be an effort to run the ball. But, I can see the skepticism for sure. They're not going to be a run-first team, and especially rightly so with all of those receivers they have.
So who is your guys' RB1 this weekend? You've kind of got C.J. Gable, Jeremiah Johnson, William Powell, and Andrew Harris at the top there. Are you taking one of these guys? Are you finding a way to get two of them? You can really go big on receivers or big on running backs. And the way receivers have been putting up points, I'm not sure you should be putting up those kind of numbers for running backs. So what's your strategy this week?
Well, for me, I mean, on the Johnson front, it sounds like he's not going to play this week. So I think that we can maybe throw him out of this conversation. I think there's some interesting conversation to have about Rainey and Trayvon Van. But, you know, the other three guys, they all are in the RB1 conversation. Andrew Harris, Jeff, you have won me over a little bit. That 10,000 plus price tag, a little bit too prohibitive to me. Comes down to Gable and Powell. Powell's got a great great matchup against the Montreal Alouettes. Harris is a great matchup against that Hamilton run defense that is not very good, but that price tag is really high. Ottawa's got the Montreal matchup, and Gable's going up against BC, and the Lions aren't great against the run. It comes down to Gable and Powell for me, and if I were to choose, Powell would be my RB1 for this week of those guys. But as it stands right now, both Powell and Gable are in my lineup. But if I had to choose one of them, William Powell would be my RB1 this week. What about you, Jeff?
Well, that's, you know, it's funny because last week I went on Hamilton Radio and they asked me who's one player you would stay away from this week. And the guy that came to mind was William Powell. And I ended up looking like a genius because of it. 6.4 points for him. Week five, he had 2.3 points in that game against Calgary. Look, William Powell is a good running back, but he's having a tough time right now. He's in a little bit of a rut, and I don't know if it's just that Ottawa's passing attack is just so good that they're going to focus on that, but they're having a hard time consistently staying with the ground game and consistently picking up yards there. The yards per rush for Powell is low as well. Now, with the Alouettes, we've seen that the Owls can be sort of the cure for what ails you. So maybe you look at Powell and you say that matchup against Montreal is really good. Me, I'm going with CJ Gable as my RB1 this week. I'm big on him. I still think he's an elite running back that's a class just below Andrew Harris and at the price tag. Love it. And I think sooner or later, Gable has to start finishing some of those drives. We know that the Eskimos are a very high-scoring team. For running backs, the more your team is in the red zone and down near the end zone, the more opportunities they're going to get to score touchdowns. So to me, that's what you have to look at. That's what's big. And that's why Tyrell Sutton is hurting our fantasy teams right now for anyone choosing him. And I know he's hurt mine a couple of times. Even if he's moving the ball, the Owls just aren't scoring. He's not getting those opportunities. So I think Gable gets the ball near the end zone. And I think there's a three-touchdown game somewhere in his future. I don't know if it's this week, but when the Esks are putting up 40 points, if you don't watch the game and you're looking at the box score after, you're kind of assuming that Gable was involved in that and had a couple of touchdowns.
The problem I'm having is that outside of these four guys, there's really not a lot of secondary options for running backs. So trying to find the cash to fit two of them in has been tough. I was thinking maybe CJ Gable and Alex Green, even though I'm not all that confident in Hamilton's run game right now, or the fact that they're going to use it. And that didn't really sit well with me. So then I thought I was going to be a genius and do Andrew Harris and a Hail Mary and Jordan Robinson, but he's not playing now. So I'm really back to the drawing board. William Powell seems like the kind of guy that I'd want to take as an RB1. Harris is still too expensive, but I don't know who I'm going to match with any of these guys as an RB2. That's really where I'm getting stuck right now.
Yeah, and it goes back to the conversation we had about those receivers, right? To get two of these RB1 guys in your lineup, you're going to have to get creative. You're going to have to buy a little lower on the quarterback. You're probably going to have to get really creative and really look for a value pick at flex, and you might have to leave your defense open. That's really the only way that you can, or completely go off the board with a few of your receiver picks if you want to get two of these guys in.
Yeah, you're right about that. I agree. The guys that I have in my lineup right now are Chris Rainey and CJ Gable, and you're looking at a combined price of a little bit under 14,000. So, doable, but still, I find myself having to make some sacrifices elsewhere in the lineup. So yeah, there's no, I know a lot of people last week were banking on Romar Morris playing. There's no Romar Morris this week. There's no $2,500 running back, that's really going to get you off the ground unless you're looking at a real dart throw. Maybe a Mercer Timmis at 3,000 because they seem to like to give him goal line opportunities, but yeah, I'm with you guys. I'm not seeing it right now.
I'm going to say the name that we promised we wouldn't say again, but I promise this question isn't about him.
Johnny Manziel is not going to play running back, I can assure you.
He's not.
He's not a good running back choice.
No. I am going to say his name, though. Does Manziel make the Alouettes a target for an opposing defense this week? The Red Blacks are only $3,500-ish dollars. That's pretty good value up against the Alouettes. Is that a team you're targeting right now?
In a week where you only have six choices and some of those defenses you have are going up against the Edmonton Eskimos or the Winnipeg Blue Bombers or the Hamilton Tiger Cats. So, yeah, there's not a lot of choice there. And if I had to pick one, I would pick the Ottawa Red Blacks. Here's where a bit of a hot take comes from me, because I don't think that defenses are going to have a great time against Johnny Manziel this year. And I don't mean Manziel is going to go in there and light them up for 40 points. What I mean is they're going to have a hard time piling up sacks. And despite a four interception game that we saw last week, they're going to have a hard time forcing a lot of turnovers off of him. And I think that'll be the case for the Ottawa Redblacks this weekend. So I think it's a safe risk because you're not breaking the bank with them and the upside is still there. But I don't think it's as profound as a lot of people think. If you're banking on that 22 points the Ticats had against them last week, I don't see a repeat of that.
Well, and first off, I think we should institute, Hannah, when you're editing this, if you were to put a bell in every time we mention Johnny Manziel's name, we could start to have some fun with that. But look, for the first time ever, I think Creever and I agree when it comes to this guy, because I think that the one thing that he has that you cannot debate is ridiculous athletic gifts. And I think that I don't think we're going to see him throw four interceptions per game on a weekly basis. I do think that was a bit of a one-off against Hamilton. That was his first start. I think as he gets more comfortable, he starts making better decisions. Now, does he become a straight-up success in this league? That's a whole lot more in question, but I don't think we're talking about him being as prone to awful turnovers as we saw in his first start. He is tough to sack, and I think that this is one of those times where I don't know if you can count on the same type of week. Now, just because Montreal's offense as a whole, and the fact that, you know, offensively and defensively, they're having a tough time getting anything done. If you are putting a defense in your lineup, then I do think Ottawa is your number one target for week 9. Now, I'm a staunch no defense guy. I've been a full convert into not putting a defensive unit in my lineup on a week-to-week basis. But if you are on the other side of that, if you disagree with that strategy, then I do think the best defense for week 9 is still Ottawa, even though I agree with a lot of what you said there, Creever.
Hannah is too. You're not playing the defenses lately.
No. I have a little kind of formula that I use to decide whether I should put one in or not, and it kind of goes something like, anyone under the $3,500 mark in a matchup that I feel good about, I will put in. I'm not spending more than $3,500, maybe a touch above that if I really like it. They're under the $3,500 mark. I love the matchup. I'm going to do it. I'm putting them in. But it's not a position where I'm willing to spend any more than that.
This might be the first week that I don't use a defense. And I know there was one week we all said that we wouldn't, and then I did because I liked Winnipeg and there was also Calgary in there. But the short weeks with only three matchups, it's tougher to find one. And the rising prices of receivers, it's a crazy world out there. It's a crazy world out there, and I'm not 100% sold on Ottawa's defense. Hey, the Redblacks' defense has their own issues right now as well. So
I think we're in great debate territory here, Jeff.
Are we? Oh, we're just flying along. All right. Great debate. Last week, it was Pat Steinberg unseating Hannah with the Daron Carter choice. Is Daron Carter a solid value buy at $3,700, and are you jumping on that? Pat and I both did, and he benefited our lineup. So Hannah's going to try to get revenge this week.
Oh, boy.
And the topic is going to be, with Travis Lule as the quarterback in BC, outside of Jonathan Jennings, who was replaced, we saw the Lions offense sputtering early in the year. Is that offense back, and is it lucrative for fantasy purposes? And moreover, is Travis Lule back as an elite quarterback with those guys like Brian Burnham and Manny Arsenault as his receivers? That's a really long, open-ended.
It's a long yes or no question, Jeff.
It's not. Yeah. Well, you get the gist of it. It is a yes or no question. Are the Lions back, baby? Do you trust that offense right now? Let's flip a coin again. Pat, you called it in the air this time.
Okay, I'm going heads.
And it's a tails. It's always tails.
Classic tails.
Always tails. So Hannah, you get to go first, or you can defer. You can have Pat go first. And what sides are you taking here?
Well, I'm going to defer to Pat. I think he's already made his side clear, saying how many Lions he's already got in his preliminary lineup. So, Pat, I'm gonna let you go first here on the yes side, I assume.
Yes. Start that clock, Creever, because here we go. I think the BC Lions give you the best value in week number 9. When we get to our money picks in just a couple of seconds, I think I've got a good value pick there. I think Travis Lulay at around $6,000 gives you solid production rather for a pretty good price. And those two receivers, Burnham and Arsenault, both under $6,000. I think this offense is coming along. They're not a top-end offense, but they give you great value, and that is very important with some of the other high prices out there right now.
All right. You came in at a touch under 30. Nicely done.
It was 29. I'm looking at the clock.
It was perfect. It was perfect. That's what you asked for, a touch under. Well, isn't that what you would call it?
I'd say he nailed it.
He nailed it. Okay.
Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding. Hannah, I trust you to edit a nice little sound in there for that. Okay. Hannah, are you ready?
I am.
And starting the clock now.
Just because they present a lot of value doesn't make them the right decision. That's the mantra that I've been preaching this entire time. $6,000, great price for a decent quarterback, but he has not given you that return in his 3 starts, just once over 20 points, and that was with the grand old total of 21. I think that you want the value to come from this team, but just wanting it is not going to give it to you. There's better mid-priced options in the league for week 9.
Okay, that wasn't even a touch under 30. That was like 30 seconds on the dot. It couldn't have been more perfect.
It's cheating a
little.
Did you
practice ding, ding, ding. This?
I can look at the clock, though. Pat can't see the clock, so he did it for me.
Don't tell everyone our secrets now. Yeah, yeah. They don't need to know how this works. Okay, I'm giving this one to Hannah. I thought that Hannah's argument was more convincing. Pat, all you convinced me of is that these guys are cheap, but I'm not sure whether I'm willing to trust players that have been so boom or bust entirely this year. Whether it's Lule's been pretty consistent, but Burnham and Arsenault have kind of had their ups and downs, and there's a reason that they're at that price tag. I'm just going to have to see a little bit more as far as them ready to jump off the charts and put up massive numbers. And I thought Hannah had a pretty convincing argument as far as, it's not proven yet. And there are still a lot of mouths to feed there in BC.
All right, redemption. That brings us right to the 3-minute warning where, Jeff, I'm going to let you start off with your money pick.
Well, I thought I was going to introduce the 3-minute warning. That would have been fun. Now, Rod Black's better at it than I am.
3-minute warning now, or is it? It is the warning.
Money pick, I'm going to go with Kembrill Tompkins. I actually thought about taking him. 2,500 Winnipeg Blue Bombers, by the way. Thought about taking him a couple of weeks ago when he made his debut against the Argos. He's in a Darius Bowman's old spot and had a solid first game. Apparently, he's built up a lot of good chemistry with Matt Nichols. Nichols has spoken very highly of him, and he's got a lot of athleticism and deep threat ability, as well as those yak yards, yards after the catch. That's what you're looking for from him. He's going to get his catches, and he's going to make something happen with that Bombers offense. Not a lot of options, as we spoke of, that are in that low money range. I like Tompkins there.
I'm going with Kevin Elliott, BC Lions receiver, and he comes in at just a touch over $3,000. 30-23 for Kevin Elliott, who put up 10.2 fantasy points in his season debut last week against the Stampeders. 4 catches for 62 yards. And what I like about Elliott is that they tried to get him involved. Lule looked to him a few times and looked to him in some tough spots. I think they're going to try to continue to work Elliott into this offense, and at $3,000, I think he can give you some really good value. To me, he's that flex guy that opens up the door to allow you to get some other big name players in there and maybe get 2 wide receiver ones or RB1s in there. Kevin Elliott, just over $3,000, Lions receiver. He's my money pick for week 9.
And my money pick at $2,500 is RJ Harris, because I like the way that he has been trending lately. He's caught 12 of his last 13 passes. Season high 5 in his last game, and he's been in the 10-point ballpark the last 3 weeks straight. So I like the matchup. I like the way he's been trending. They're getting him the ball. RJ Harris at $2,500 for Ottawa is my money pick this week. Over to the lock of the week. Pat, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, and I'm going to the Edmonton-BC matchup once again. My money pick was on the orange side, and on the green and gold side, my lock of the week is receiver Darrell Walker. BC comes in as the 7th-ranked pass defense in the CFL. I know that Duke Williams was the guy who lit them up in their matchup in Week 3. This week, I think Williams gets a little bit extra attention, and I think that opens things up for Darrell Walker. Just a shade under $8,000 for your Week 9 lineup. I think Walker goes off against the Lions. He is my Week 9 lock of the week.
Okay, I'm going to go with a receiver as well, and I'm going with Jalen Saunders. I know I hyped him up earlier on the show, but I think he's just emerged into that clear top target for Jeremiah Mazzoli. Those two guys have a ton of chemistry, and I'm sold. I'm clearly sold. This guy is a star in the CFL. And he's a player that you should put in your lineup without hesitation before his price blows up like guys like Duke Williams and Brandon Banks.
I'm going to stick on the Ottawa train. I'm going to stick on the Harris train. So my lock of the week, Trevor Harris. He's coming off his best week of the season, nearly 400 yards, 2 touchdowns. And it was a strong showing against the Argos. I think he's going to have another strong showing up against the Alouettes this week. He is in my lineup. Let's see if I can get a clean sweep of the Harrises, RJ, Trevor, and Andrew. If
Anna's
I can
Harrises.
Fit that in, yeah,
you're going for that. Yeah, the team of Harrises. I
a
like
trifecta
that.
Trifecta of Harrises.
All right, that can't bode well. That can't bode well. You can't have too many guys in the lineup with the same name.
I once tried to build an NFL fantasy football team around that. And it didn't work, but we'll see.
What was the name? Do you remember?
It was all of the Deshauns. All of the Shauns.
Yeah,
any Sean, Deshaun, no Sean.
Okay.
I thought it was good. It didn't work. Don't try that.
Well, we'll just have to rename Hannah Harris. So Harris Nordman is going with Trevor Harris as her lock of the week in week number 9. Harris, did we get any hot takes this week? I think that we went without him. I know that Jeff kind of qualified one, but I don't know if we had any true hot takes in week 9.
It was our most agreeable week between the three of us, that's for sure. That's what happens when you're down to 3 matchups and the salaries are polarizing. You're forced onto the same page. So no hot takes this week.
I don't like it. I don't like it when we all agree. We have to change that for week 10. Guys, we are approaching the halfway mark of the CFL season, which means we're approaching the halfway mark of the CFL Fantasy Podcast. Don't forget Davis Sanchez, James Cebulski by each week for the Waggle Podcast as well. You can check that out at cfl.ca. Play CFL Total Pick'em too. Make your picks at pick'em.cfl.ca. You can win some extra cash on top of that. And follow all of us on Twitter and make sure you're checking out cfl.ca for Roto Experts and their updates throughout the week. I'm on Twitter at fan960 Steinberg. Hannah's at HL Nordman and Creever at Jeff Creever. And finally, your call to action. Your lineups are due for Thursday night. cflfantasy.tsn.ca. Get your lineups in, and we'll be talking all about it when we do our week 10 edition in 1 week's time. For Jeff, for Hannah, my name is Pat. Good luck with your 3 games and good luck with your week 9 lineups. We'll talk to you next week. This has been another edition of the CFL Fantasy Podcast.